Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and will use it to be wrong on the internet. I am that bored man and my name is Graham Lee. The topic of today's episode is, should software engineers be licensed? That is, should software engineering be constituted as a professional discipline in the same way that, say, engineers in other branches of engineering are, or lawyers or doctors? Should we hold software engineers to professional standards and codes of practice, disbar people from practicing software engineering if they fail to meet those standards and any code of professional ethics? Should there be a body who decides who is and who isn't permitted to be a software engineer and to use that title in their work? Now, the software craftsmanship movement, evidently based on the medieval guild systems, would like this kind of arrangement and would like to position themselves as the guild masters, if you like. You know, anyone who calls themselves a master craftsman is saying that they are the people who control the guilds, who get to define the membership of the monopoly on performing that trade, much like a medieval guild did. So the reason that people went from apprenticeships working under their masters to journeyman before they became masters themselves was that on completing their apprenticeship, they were ejected from the cities in which they'd done their apprenticeships and were forbidden to practice their trade within those cities because they would have been good enough to compete with the local masters. So they had to travel and do day work, so journée being from the French for daily. The journeymen would charge their labour out by the day until they found somewhere that they could set up mastery or be admitted into the guild as a master and a full member of the profession. So software craftsmanship, as described in Pete McBreen's book Software Craftsmanship, The New Imperative, takes on that guild model, and anyone who calls themselves a master craftsman is presumably saying that they should be able to arbitrate who is or isn't a software engineer. Opinion, of course, is very diverse on this topic. The two big professional institutions in the United States are the Association of Computing Machinery, which has generally been organisationally opposed to the requirements for licensing software engineers, although individual members have turned up on licensing committees and lobbying groups and involved with defining licensed engineering practices in those US states who do require software engineers to hold a license. And the IEEE, the Institution of Electrical and Electronic Engineering, is in favour broadly of licensing software engineers and, you know, produces the SWEBOC, a software engineering body of knowledge, which encapsulates their opinions on current practice in software engineering and would be used as the basis of an exam curriculum for licensing software engineers. In the UK, the British Computer Society, BCS, is no longer called the British Computer Society, actually. It's now called BCS, the Chartered Institute for IT, and it is associated with the Royal Chartered Institute of Engineers and grants members post-nominal initials And so they are engaged in the practice of licensing software engineers, even though such licenses are not exclusionary. If you aren't a licensed engineer and member or fellow of the BCS in the UK, it doesn't disbar you from producing software in the UK. So that's where the sort of big players sit. Of course, most of the inertia is behind not licensing the craft or industry of software engineering. And the reasons given for not doing that are manifold. What the ACM likes to do is to compare the professional license of software engineering with the professional license of other disciplines of engineering within the United States, which is really just playing on the pun that software engineering is called engineering. There is no reason to say that the rules around professional affiliation would have to be exactly the same in, say, civil engineering as they are in software engineering. But by calling it engineering, which is rare, ACM typically use the phrase computer science to discuss all activities in computing when they are in favour of them. So this is very much a rhetorical trick by the ACM. They call it software engineering so that they can say, but this is how engineers are examined for professional engineering distinction in the United States. They have to take an 8-hour exam where the first 4 hours are on general engineering, on everything from fluid dynamics, structural mechanics, electronics and electrical engineering. And then they have a discipline-specific exam in the second half. And no software engineer would learn all of that engineering without it being a distraction from learning the craft of building software. Therefore, we should not require software engineers to be professional engineers. And that is, of course, dissembling. That's the wrong argument. They're saying you should not have to take the engineering exam in order to produce software. Well, you shouldn't have to take the engineering exam to be a doctor either. And the doctor is a restricted profession, and they don't have to take the engineering exam. So, you know, there really is no substance to that argument at all. And then they say the professional engineering exam is a multiple choice exam. And how could you express any of the software engineering body of knowledge in a 1 correct answer, 3 incorrect answers question when there are, you know, different ways of doing things? Again, using like mechanical arguments about the procedure in one discipline and the play on words that they have chosen in this context to use the same word when describing computing, which they would otherwise call computer science, to argue against the possibility of an examination in that discipline. A common argument, another common argument against the professionalisation of software engineering is that software engineering practice is too immature, that technology changes too quickly, and that practices change too quickly for any kind of professional exam to be worth its salt. The argument goes, if someone got their informatics or computer science degree in 1978, how would we know whether they were a competent software engineer now? If the curriculum was defined in 2017, how would we know that it was appropriate to engineering practice at the end of 2020? And the answer to these is found in many existing professional disciplines, including that of project management, which is, of course, an important part of any software engineering enterprise, and one that is popularly qualified. You will often meet qualified project managers when working on a software project. And the answer is continuing professional development, that your membership of the professional association is contingent upon attending conferences or training courses or publishing in the literature on engaging with the forefront of the discipline and its developments. That is true of the CISSB, and I'm going to forget the exact meaning of that acronym, but it's something like Chartered Information Systems Security Professional. So InfoSec does have professional qualifications. Again, they are not mandatory, they are discretionary. So, you know, someone can practice information security without being a CISSB, but the idea is that having the CISSB communicates the the professionalism and the standard of the qualification holder by essentially proxying their reputation with reputation of the awarding body. So the CISSB, you have to study, you have to pass the exam, and then you have to keep on doing your CPDs, and you get certain like numbers of points for attending conferences, speaking at conferences, attending trade organizations, or even, you know, reading books or subscribing to the industry journals, you know, anything that shows an ongoing engagement. And of course, there are different amounts of points because these different activities represent different levels of engagement, and you have to get a certain number of points over a 1 or a 2 year period in order for your qualification to remain current. That could be done in software engineering as well. But let's go back and let's pick apart that question, you know, or that statement. Software engineering practice is too immature to professionalize. If that is the end of your statement, then that is a very weak statement to make and a very hard position to defend, because you could add the word yet. Software engineering practice is too immature to professionalize yet, and you could indicate a desire to mature the practice, to do more discovery into what represents good software engineering. We could also argue that the variety of different new technologies and techniques has more to do with fashion and hype than it does to do with improving work or quality. And we could say that there is some, you know, slightly more timeless or sort of sartorial software engineering approach that is a collection of practices that have been tried and tested. And of course, you know, different people would have different ideas of what those are. Probably a lot of people would agree that some form of version control, that some form of requirements gathering and prioritization, that some form of service level agreement for bug fixing and maintenance and deployment is a standard and acceptable practice. People would disagree over whether particular approaches to automated testing are recognized standard practices, whether, for example, test-driven development is a proven technique that every professional should expect to adopt, or whether it's a novel technique that's used by some partisans but doesn't necessarily imply better software. And a lot of people would agree that the practices that probably do improve the quality of software, but that are not widely adopted, say design by contract, or formal methods, should not be considered part of the professional body of knowledge. So they, you know, they are things that one can do, but not things that one should do. So, do we intend to mature the practice of software? Is it currently maturing? Is the idea that things are not yet mature? If not, what are the conditions? You know, at what point do we come back round to this discussion and say, actually, no, we have now stabilised our practices. We have now agreed on a common baseline. Could we maybe start now with the collection of practices that probably are universal, which would be online rather than batch development, verification and validation, and some kind of requirements, recording and tracing through the software, and say, you know, that even though this is a very weak milquetoast collection of practices, nonetheless, it currently represents best practice, and we can ratchet up from there. We'll never like fall back behind this currently very small collection of practices, but we will slowly advance them or add others, or define a maturity framework like the Software Engineering Institute's CMMI framework, on which that is a level one. That if you're doing version control, if you're doing some form of verification and validation, and you are prioritizing and recording your requirements, then you are at least following a documented process, and so you are level two. And like above that represents higher levels of discipline and professionalism, but that level two is already an achievement. What would be the effect on the industry of introducing some kind of license or professionalization? Let's, for a moment, ignore the mechanics of how it would work and just say that, you know, there is going to be some form of software engineering license awarded by some form of software engineering institution. And that it will be required in some context, and we can come back to the context later. What would happen? Well, probably one of the big effects would be suddenly there aren't any software engineers anymore. So people who are already practitioners, you know, who have lots of experience, I would like consider myself in this sort of 16 years of professional experience, but only very recently got any form of formal qualification in software engineering whatsoever, we would probably expect to be grandfathered in, and so would people who have similar levels of experience but don't have a formal qualification, or people who have a formal qualification and less experience, and probably even people who have significantly less experience. Now, what would that mean for, say, diversity and inclusivity? Would it be that people who have like relevant degree courses, let's acknowledge that these are mostly going to be westernized, educated, rich people, and that a lot of courses in computing tend to track white and male in many like European and American societies. But that also most university level computing courses aren't actually anything about software engineering or even building software at all, and that you could probably do a computer science degree using a pencil and paper. Would that then exclude a whole bunch of other people from the discipline? Would it mean that people who are, you know, who don't already have access to some form of capital or to like family wealth or something would be unable to enter the field? Or would it mean that the field would become more normalised because and more diverse and inclusive because the barrier to entry would actually be the objective measurement of whether you meet the subjective criteria of the like chartered institution. Therefore, that anyone who could get sponsorship by a sponsoring organisation, say by a future employer or by an apprenticeship organisation or by a university, could become a licensed software engineer by demonstrating their command of the body of knowledge, not by being a mediocre white man with a good network. You know, would it be damaging or beneficial to the diversity and inclusivity of the field? And does all software necessarily need to be performed by licensed engineers? Well, there's a kind of slippery slope argument here, which goes, let's say that it's only safety critical systems that need to be produced by licensed software engineers. And then we need some kind of definition of what is a safety critical system. And yeah, we might say, well, medical devices are definitely in, control devices for power plants, for like military purposes. Is it ethical? You know, does it meet the industry code of ethics, the professional practice to engage in weapons software engineering? But let's say that additionally, anything that is sort of related to civil engineering or industrial engineering, where there are like life critical components to the physical system and there is a software component, is a safety critical system. Is a car a safety critical system? You know, would the engineers at Volkswagen who produced the defeat device for its emissions tests have been considered like safety critical engineers working in a licensed environment or not? Or would it be that their company, the Volkswagen and its management, are the people who need the license to sell software into a safety critical environment, and their responsibility to know how it was engineered, and therefore their responsibility to know how their employees and their contractors and their subcontractors and their suppliers work? In which case it would be very similar to the sort of viral standards you get in like ISO 9000 quality management or ISO 27000 information security systems management, where what you need to demonstrate is that you have a quality management framework and an improvement framework, and that you are managing your work to within that framework, and not that every one of your employees is a licensed professional who has a command of the body of knowledge. Because another argument that has been used against the professionalization is that there are so many different tasks in and roles in software that a single software engineering professional license would have to cover a lot of things that are actually divided labor when performed in practice. And you know, on the one hand, you could say maybe it should. Maybe a self-organizing team should be built out of people who are competent at the entire software delivery process, from understanding the problem domain to deploying the code into production. Or maybe you could say that the license would be discipline specific, in the same way that someone who has a licensed engineering status may have done the exam in, say, fluid dynamics or in aeronautical engineering, even though what they get is licensed engineer status. And so you still have to check when you hire someone, is their skill set and their knowledge appropriate to the task to which we're putting them? But what systems are safety critical? I mean, you know, has, say, Facebook or WhatsApp ever been used in a safety critical scenario? Probably it has. Probably people have contacted emergency services using WhatsApp, or maybe like lifeboat crews or fire crews have used Facebook Messenger to coordinate where they are and their response to an emergency. You know, it becomes readily possible to draw the boundaries wider and wider. If you're using a smartphone device at all for a safety critical purpose, then anything that can like post a notification onto the screen and therefore change the touch targets during your safety critical work probably becomes part of the safety critical system. So are all smartphone app developers now developers of safety critical systems? And finally, where are our responsibilities to society? Codes and has replaced them with with unlicensed and in not many cases amateurish replacements. Take the example of, say, hotels or of taxis, which are both licensed professional roles, licensed professional occupations. You have to be a licensed taxi driver in many countries in the world, many local authorities. In fact, all the local authorities in the UK, you have to have a license from the authority to operate a taxi, a private hire vehicle within those places. But Uber likes to say, our drivers are not employees, they are associates. Our company is not a taxi company, it is a software application that enables car sharing, and that therefore our drivers don't need to be vetted. Now, of course, Uber have had to row back on this when it's been discovered that some of their drivers don't behave in the way that a professional taxi driver would, because they don't have a license and they don't need to like uphold a particular code of ethics in order to function as a taxi driver and to be permitted to drive their taxis. Similarly with hotels. Hotels have safety codes, they have expectations on their staff, duties of care on the people, including children, who stay in the hotels. Airbnb is not a hotel chain. It is a software platform for enabling people who have spare rooms to allow access to guests of those spare rooms. And so we find that not every Airbnb operator is necessarily as professional as a hotelier. Quelle surprise. Is this how we treat society? Is this what people who, not even just the people who use computers, but the people who are used by computers, or the people who interact with systems that have been computerized or digitalized, is this what we expect them to deserve? Is this the world that we think is the best we can do for them? Of course, I want to hear your feedback on this. Graham Lee at acm.org, Twitter, iwasleeg, IWASLWEG, or reply to the post on the sickpers.info, sicperes.info website. Thank you very much for listening. Those of you who are having a break now, enjoy your break. I hope you get a chance to relax, even if not necessarily a chance to visit the people you would like to visit. Stay safe, stay well, and I will talk to you again soon.